Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter Abell on Okanagan Country Radio. A very pleasant good morning to you. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@ledge.wa.gov. That's tracy.ellis@leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100. And there are two words on everyone's mind in this room right now, signy and die. So, which actually means without day, but for us it means the legislative session for 2025 is over, and what a session it was. Senator Short, I will start with you. What are your impressions of this legislative session?
So in my time here in the legislature, you know, we talk a lot about the frustrations and kind of the tone deafness that a lot of folks in the majority have for Washingtonians, but this is the worst session. It is structurally setting us up for problems down the road. It did not structurally fix the reason we were here in the first place with the deficit, for overspending, for pushing spending in the out years. It does more of the same thing, but it adds tax revenue to that, which essentially means they didn't have to fix anything. But there were some memorable moments along the way, and I think the biggest one is the impact Washingtonians had and how often they, you know, that they weighed in on tax bills, on policy bills that would hurt our ability to be independent and, you know, free and, you know, making the decisions that we need to make for ourselves and our families. And, you know, most notably was the property tax bill. 43,000 people signed in opposition. The reason we do not have, that piece of the property tax bill is because of you, because of all of the people who took time and they kept pushing and they kept pushing. Now, there's still part of that property tax bill that unfortunately more than likely will be signed into law, and that's the local levy piece, where schools will have more per student capacity to go out to the voters. Going to the voters is a good thing, but folks, this, remember, these are simple majority votes. They're not the statutorily higher 60% majority when it comes to, you know, when it comes to bonds. So there's still work out there, but I'm just so proud of people not giving up, pushing along the way, and you helped make parts of our session successful.
Representatives Engel and Abell, this was your first legislative session. What were your impressions?
Yeah, I guess a few thoughts here. So first of all, I want to echo Senator Short's comments on everybody who weighed in on these bills and the proposed spending and tax plans in front of us. We had a tremendous number of folks from 7th District reach out. A lot of people testified in person or remotely. Reached out to our office just on a regular basis, and that was tremendously encouraging. Big picture observation, you know, we came into the session with the Democrat leadership saying they were going to raise taxes. And at the end of the session, lo and behold, they've raised taxes. And I think there are some kind of silver linings we can look at. I think the amount that has been raised ultimately ended up being less than some of the numbers that were thrown out there. So I think we can be pleased that, in that regard. But look, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. This is a $78 billion budget that's been sent over to the governor. It represents a continuation of the huge increase in state government over the course of the last 15 years. $3.2 billion in new taxes for transportation, almost $10 billion new taxes for operations. And I don't think we're getting a whole lot for it. So I'm very discouraged with this final product. And we'll see what the governor decides to do with it over the course of the next couple of weeks.
Representative Engel, what are your thoughts?
Same here. This is my first session, obviously, and it was eye-opening, to say the least. I will say that it's hard to know what things are like really at all before you get here. You know, having worked in the congressional office for a long time, and I've known Senator Short and other legislators, there's really no way to describe it. I think it's an amazing experience. very, very busy and hectic, and you've got things flying at you every direction, you know, hundreds and hundreds of bills that passed off the House floor, and you got to try to learn about these and find out how it impacts your district and call and stakeholders. And sometimes things work well. Sometimes you see these bills that are problematic and you're talking to stakeholders, you get a good story together, you talk to their side and they agree to change it. And sometimes not, more often, unfortunately. And so, you know, that is a great victory with the property tax. That was probably one of the biggest things we were concerned about coming in here, was this raising the property tax cap where local governments and the state could raise property taxes without asking the voters. That's a win that they didn't include that. Unfortunately, there's new taxes on just about every area of your life. And as Representative Abel said, you're not going to get much for it. There's a lot of raises for public employees and bureaucrats and politicians, some enhancements for illegal immigrants. But other than that, it's mostly maintaining the status quo on our backs.
One positive, I guess it can be seen as a positive, you guys tell me, is this $100 million for hiring law enforcement. It wasn't a bill, I know, that you sponsored, Representative Abel, and Senator Holley sponsored in the Senate. But, you know, for a session like this, some money to hire law enforcement, I guess, is that a positive?
Well, you might have seen the grimace on my face when you said that. You know, if it's a positive, it's a very small step forward. So, you know, here's my perspective and a bit of history. So Senator Holley, for years, has been leading the charge to say we have to hire more law enforcement officers here in the state. He's proposed $100 million for that purpose. And both our candidates for governor last November, the Republican candidate and the Democrat candidate, our current governor, ran on a platform of $100 million for hiring law enforcement. And we were able to champion Senator Holley's bill over in the Senate. I introduced the companion bill over in the House that would do exactly that. What ultimately ended up happening was that the House majority said, we don't really like that idea. We'd rather have $100 million. There would be two things. One, you would have access to some of these funds if the local jurisdiction does a tax increase to help pay for it. Whereas our bills would have been a tax credit, meaning Olympia gets less and local jurisdictions get more. So the bill that came out said you can have some of these funds if you do a tax increase, and it can go for any criminal justice purpose. So if that sounds general and vague to you, it's because it's general and vague. So I think $100 million for origami classes for felons is not the same as $100 million for cops.
Right.
So I don't think this ends up meeting the campaign pledge of the governor. We'll see what he decides to do with it. I think he signaled that he'll probably sign it. At the end of the day, it will result in some hiring of new cops, but it's not anywhere near what the original bill proposed.
You know, another positive, the first positive, since that one turned out not to be a positive, is Representative Engel, you actually had a bill passed, which, you know, for a freshman Republican, that's something we're celebrating. You know, I mean, congratulations.
Thank you.
The governor signed it into law, and, you know, it may not sound like a big deal, talking about water systems plan, or what is it?
Small water systems.
Small water systems.
Group B is the term that most people don't know.
You had a bill passed, right?
I got a bill passed. Well, and it will do things. It's, in our district, these people in rural areas, they want to sell a piece of property perhaps to a friend or neighbor and to build a house on. They want to share a well. This will make it easier to do that. And I think there's numerous situations of people I know who could have benefited from this in the past and will benefit from it in the future. So, that was great. There's another one I've said on this program before. I didn't expect it to pass. When Department of Health comes out and tells the Democrats they don't want it to go anywhere, I just figured that was what would happen. But I think in this case, the Department of Health had got some things wrong, and I was able to explain that to the committee chair, who I think honestly got irritated that the Department of Health had embellished their concerns, and we got it through. I'll say, too, this is something supported by the local health departments. The idea came from the Tri-County Health District. And so even when Speaker Jenkins signed the bill, she told me the Department of Health had called her and told her they didn't want her to sign the bill. And she said she told them she didn't care.
Well, there you go. And that's rare, right, for a Republican to get that kind of support from
I think so.
Democratic leadership.
I think so. I also think Speaker Jenkins understood the bill. She works for a local health department. I think she understands the problems that the bill was trying to fix. So that certainly helps. And, you know, on Speaker Jenkins, this is kind of slightly off topic, but I wanted to mention she's going to be in Colville on Wednesday.
Oh, really?
And
for Mary Selecki.
Yeah, because Mary Selecki, the former Secretary of Health, also related to the Department of Health, you know, unfortunately passed away here maybe a couple of weeks ago, and her funeral's on Wednesday, and so I'll be there, and Speaker Jenkins will be in the hometown. Yep,
I'll be there, too.
I will have to say, as a reporter for many years before I came here, I was a reporter in radio, and Secretary Selecki was just a fantastic person to work with from a media perspective. You know, very upfront, you know, did a good job of explaining things in a manner that everybody could understand. I was sad when she passed. But you know, the celebration of her life has been great. You know, I think Senator Short on the Senate floor, that was very nice. You know, the resolution supporting her. And, you know, I didn't realize that she lived in Colville. This was the first I heard about it. So I'm sure for all of you, you know, she was an important part of your community.
Yep, absolutely.
Senator Short, I know one of the things that you were very proud of isn't necessarily something that got passed, but something that got killed, and that's that wood stove bill. That was something we talked about a lot in this show, that, you know, would have regulated wood stoves in a way that may have been prohibitive. I mean, may have kept some people from being able to buy wood stoves in the long run. Talk a little bit about that.
So the bill that was introduced, and it would have created a double regulatory system for wood stoves that were manufactured in the country, really, in the state and in the country. And part of it is there are already federal regulations that regulate the particulate matter for, you know, for the wood and pellet stoves. But the state wanted their own system of regulation and whether or not the stove could be sold in the state of Washington, you know, which does, unfortunately, there's a area in Alaska where they have done this, and that's really what they were trying to pattern it after. And I'll tell you what, I've never seen, you know, bureaucracy go after an entity like legitimate manufacturer, like they did with our wood and pellet stove manufacturers. And I've seen that a lot over the years in different forms, and that I was so elated when that bill died. Now, look, we're going to still have to watch it, but the fact that Ecology declined to want the sponsor to move the bill forward said a lot, and we're going to do a lot in the interim to learn more from our manufacturers to make sure that we are primed and ready to go in case this bill comes back.
Did you have a bill that passed that you were particularly pleased about?
I actually had three, and one was from constituents in Okanagan County. They have orchards that the deer love, and partly with the increase in predator populations between wolves and cougars and things like that, it's really, really pushing the deer and elk into farm fields and into orchards. And so what this bill essentially does is it earmarks the funding that the Fish and Wildlife would get for potential payments to farmers and ranchers from damage, from crop damage. And it really takes a segment of it, 20% of it, for Frontier One counties. And those Frontier One counties are our smallest counties. And it doesn't say that no one else can get funding. It just says, you know, the funding you get, 20% of it should be helping ranchers and farmers in those counties. There's 12 of them. Okanagan County is one of them. And it's just something that it's so hard. Farmers and ranchers are amazing. There's so many things that impact what they do. And we've already seen elk populations in our valley, and which really we love the wildlife. They're amazing animals, but they do damage. And so, you know, for ranchers and farmers who decide to go down that path of seeking reimbursement, you know, they do have to go through a process in order to do that. But I'm super proud. Now, none of mine have been signed yet. They have all three of my bills have been delivered to the governor. The second bill really memorializes funding for our local wildlife conflict specialist who works for all of northeastern Washington. It's funding that goes to Ferry and Stevens County Sheriff's Office to pay for his service. He has been an incredible asset and a needed asset to give our communities and our ranchers a voice when it comes to really predator management. So I'm really excited. I know one of the bills I've already gotten good indication will be signed. I need to follow up with staff on the other one. So stay tuned. I'm not done yet.
Predator management, that's actually a good segue into talking a little bit about wolves. I think all of you have bills, didn't you, related to wolves? How did that go this session?
Not very well. It started out good. And I'm on the Agriculture Natural Resources Committee, which is where the wolf bills were heard. We had great hearings on Hunter, Abel, and I both had wolf bills that had hearings that Caldwell Tribe came out and gave great testimony on. I think there was Hunter's bill went a little farther than mine did, and so it was more or less dead on arrival, I think. But mine had some legs, and I worked with stakeholders and went out and reached out to as many environmental organizations as I could and had some kind of challenging conversations and managed to get the bill to a place where I thought it would have been helpful and still have passability. I actually expected it to get passed unanimously out of committee. Unfortunately, as we're sitting there on the last day of what we call cutoff, the last day to pass bills out of committee, getting ready to vote on it, and the chair leans over and asks if I'm going to vote to reintroduce grizzly bears. And I said no, and she said if I didn't vote for the grizzly bear reintroduction bill, then she wasn't going to let mine have a vote at all. And so, unfortunately, I couldn't make that choice, and so the wolf bill died in committee.
So the question was, we deal with the predators we have while adding new predators at the same time. It is, I thought even really a difficult decision for you, but unfortunately, because your bill dies because of it, right?
It's unfortunate, and honestly, I will say that I think this decision really came from higher up the Democrat leadership chain. I don't think anyone on the committee of either party wanted that to happen. And I know I've heard, got a lot of feedback from some of the other reasonable Democrats that they really felt bad that that happened that way. And we're going to keep working on it, though. I think there's chance for the future, maybe. It's hard to know what to think after this happens.
I'll chop in a little bit. I'm may not know all the facts here, but I suspect there's a strong possibility of the future of continuing to work on this issue. My sense is that there's broad recognition that it was a good bill. It should have gone further than what it did, and so it's a good basis to continue moving forward. My sense is there's also some recognition that you were done dirty in our district it was in the process, and that's extremely annoying and unfortunate. And so this is an ongoing issue. It's not going away in the immediate near future. So I think there's good work to build on during the interim, the next session, for sure on that.
Well, in this system that we're so privileged to be a part of, this legislative process, tests you. It tests what you're willing to do. It pushes to see, can we hold you hostage on something where you vote for something you wouldn't normally vote for in order to get your bill? And you're constantly tested. And I'm proud. As hard as that was, I know that was a hard decision. Not a hard decision, but frustrating for him to have to make. We have to stand on our principles and our district's principles, more importantly. And so those decisions are frustrating, but they're easy to make. And it just shows that we stand up and we're not going to be bought off, frankly. But there's one thing I'd like to add on this issue, and that's Fish and Wildlife Commissioners. We in Senate Ag and Natural Resources Committee, once the governor finally decided who he was going to pick, we had successful hearings on all three of his appointees. We were able to get them voted out of committee. Unfortunately, we really lost time to get them off of the floor. Obviously, what I would consider the very rabid environmental groups who have refused to be at the table on any of these issues, we're pushing hard not to have certain of them not confirmed. But we did send our yes votes in support of all three of them. Two of them are people who have served before, Molly Linville and Jim Anderson. And the third gentleman, I love this time of session.
Victor,
thank you. Victor Garcia, really interesting man with a lot of history, a lot of just very diverse thinking, hunting and fishing background. But yet, part of Ducks Unlimited and other groups where he's passionate about making sure that our wildlife thrive and survive. I'm hopeful. I mean, we talk about whether it's wolves or different natural or wildlife issues, really hopeful that this is going to be a better balance for the commission. They can certainly serve, even though they were not confirmed. I think the fact that we got them out of committee really sets them on a good path. And I'm anxious to see the kind of work they're going to do.
And I'll add on that, too. I was glad it worked out with my schedule to be able to watch most of the confirmation hearings. And it was fascinating. I was impressed with all three of them, particularly Molly Linville, as she was telling her story about being, I think, third or fourth generation in, she grew up in Lincoln County, but now her husband's ranch is in Douglas County. But she's talking about being a place-based person, which really resonated with me. I actually kind of got choked up while she was talking about just how challenging it's been to work and ranch in Washington State, but that this is where she lives and who she is, she's dedicated to the place where she is and that she's willing to get involved and fight to make it better. And it resonated with me. It's also how I feel, as a fifth generation Washingtonian. I have three brothers that have moved to Idaho, and I'm not going to do that, right? It's you get this challenge, all this challenging thing, and it's why we get in this institution, because we're not giving up on Washington State, even though it's really become difficult for rural areas. And so it's really an honor to be here. And I think Molly Linville really inspired me in her hearing.
I think the Fish and Wildlife Commission, that's one of the many areas where we saw some real contrast between the current governor and the former governor. Maybe this program is a chance to completely close the book on the former governor, but it just seemed if that was one area where it was really, and Senator Short, don't you think it was a bit major contrast between the two administrations?
Night and day contrast. And that was the first thing that actually we were super concerned about just less than a couple weeks into session. And actually it wasn't even that, because he, Insa made those appointments just like his last day in office. And the fact that the Governor Ferguson was willing to take a step back and say, okay, are these truly the people we want to serve, the commission? I'm so gratefully did that. I mean, obviously having a role with a Senate advice and consent role that we have, we had somewhat of a role in that. We had to vote on the Senate floor to give those positions back to him. Look, we were just so close to losing any ability to hunt and fish in the state of Washington. There was such a strong movement from Washington Wildlife First and other really just draconian organizations that really, they want animals to have rights. They want animals to have more rights than people. It says it right on their website. I'm not making this stuff up. And I think it just showed how far askew the commission became. Look, we all want to make sure that wildlife are perpetuated into the future for future generations. We want to do our part. We realize that's a very serious responsibility, but we also need to manage them as well. And we were just so close to a point that what I think would have forever changed Fish and Wildlife as an agency and what we could do in the state of Washington relative to hunting and fishing.
Speaking of hunting, I'll go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say too, in that vein, I had the opportunity to meet with the governor's policy director for natural resources a couple of times in my office, and I was very impressed with him. His name's Owen, and the first time he made the point multiple times over the course of the conversation that this is the first time he's had a job working for a partisan person, right? Mm-hmm. And it just was so clear that this was a passion, was to try to actually do good for the people who live in these areas. And I really appreciated that. As we discussed the Fish and Wildlife Commission, we discussed the challenges of wolves. He offered to make phone calls and talk to some of the producers who are struggling in our district. And it was just really, I never worked with Governor Inslee's staff, but on these issues, but this was, I just felt very positive that if you're going to have a Democrat governor in a very blue state, you have one who will have conversations with you about these things. That's really all the most you can hope for.
Go ahead.
No.
I was just going to say, there's still a lot of people who are concerned about, the commission's role and whether or not that should be restructured a bit. And I know definitely we have continued to have those conversations. For those folks who think there is more work to be done. I think absolutely there is, and those conversations will continue.
Yeah, and along that vein, I mean, in a way, this commissioner appointment issue brings us full circle back to wolves. I mean, really, a big part of the genesis for the wolf legislation that we had out there was because the commission was failing to appropriately engage in the management of the wolf population. So these new appointments on the commission will help in that regard. You know, it may not bring about a sea change, but the alternative would have been just really terrible. So this was a small step in the right direction from my perspective.
So much more to talk about. We've got parental rights, Second Amendment issues, rent control. Oh, my. We will be back to talk about all those things with 7th District legislators, Senator Shelby Short, and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District Senator Shelley Short and Representatives Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm your host, Tracy Ellis, with the Washington State Senate Republican Caucus. You can email me with your questions, tracy.ellis@ledge.law.gov. That's tracy.ellis at leg.wa.gov. Or call 509-826-0100, 509-826-0100. I had my long list of things that we needed to talk about here in this last half hour of the legislative session for us. You know, one thing that I know is a big concern for all of you is this increased capacity for school levies, where school districts, but maybe not some of the districts here, the 7th district, can raise the property tax that pays for schools to a higher level. Why is that? Maybe explain that and why is it problematic?
So the what it does is it creates or perpetuates, I should say, recreates inequity. So a property, you know, a school district in Seattle or Bellevue is going to be able to raise more money per student just because of the fact they're urban. They don't have the kind of federal land that's not able to be taxed by our local communities, our counties. And so what you start seeing is that really stark difference, which is the reason we were in the middle of McCleary, because the state allowed local property taxes to fund a greater share of education funding than the state. And the inequity piece was one of the key pieces. So folks, we're revisiting that again all over. And I really think that they know that that's a chance that's going to happen. And that's when you're really going to see the tax increases, you know, the excuse to raise taxes to deal with it. But we were talking during the break, and you know what they can have a levy that might be 30 cents, you know, for every $1,000 valuation, and yet some in our communities are you know, even though you're capped at 250, I mean, could go a lot higher than that. Originally, back in the early 2000s, you could be upwards of $4.50 a thousand and not raise much money at all. And I think our rural schools are going to be hit really hard. The inequity of where you live is going to be felt quite dramatically.
Now, I wanted to explain what McCleary is. You'll hear legislators throw that word out a lot. That was a lawsuit that came in the 2000s. Basically, the state Supreme Court found that the state was not funding education adequately. And the reason was because levy dollars were paying for what was supposed to be basic education. And Senator Short just mentioned why that's inequitable, because in Seattle, you could have a quarter increase, raise more money than a $2.50 increase in Okanagan County, for example, would raise. So it's not equitable. And basically, when you say we're getting back to McCleary, that's what we're talking about.
Right? Yeah, sorry about that. We throw a lot of words around that make sense to us, so I appreciate that. The biggest piece of it comes back to our state's constitution, which it is our paramount duty to fund public education in the state of Washington. And that's why this has been such a huge issue, a constitutional issue. I know folks are frustrated that, you know, we see more and more funding for education given some of the social types of policies that have been shoved down on our school districts. But really, it comes back to our Constitution, which makes a huge argument for McCleary 2.0.
McCleary has always been sort of fascinating to me. So, I mean, Senator Schwartz is absolutely right that it's in our state constitution that it's our paramount duty to amply fund our public education system. Also, our constitution outlines that it's the legislature that appropriates the funds. And so where the rubber really met the road to McCleary, was the Supreme Court said the legislature was failing to engage in that duty and actually went so far as to hold the legislature in contempt and issue fines unless or until the legislature appropriated more money. And it's fascinating when you talk to constitutional scholars, they have said, you know, prior to McCleary, I never would have dreamt that a court could compel a legislature to appropriate funds because that's the core duty of the legislature. Mm-hmm. It would be like if the legislature passed a law that said in the case of Hunter Abel versus Andrew Engel, the courts had to find in favor of Andrew Engel. That's a core function of the judiciary. We don't get to do that. And so, you know, the McCleary reasoning, the McCleary decision had long been a source of constitutional concern. But that being said, that's where we are. You know, so when we talk about another McCleary decision, again, it's the court grabbing the wheel and saying the legislature shall spend more money on this issue.
So I guess it would be easier for the legislature just to do it, right? So you don't have to go that route, right?
That's one of the options.
Right.
Well, another thing on the education front, there was a bill in the House that called the title was K-12 Savings and Efficiencies, right? It sounds like a pretty good title. Problem is the bill did two things. One is it played this shell game where it siphoned off about 2% of funding to schools each month for the rest of this fiscal year and gives it to them back in the next fiscal year and creates a little pot of money for the ones that get really tight on their money. They can borrow from that to get an advance on the money they should have got already. And it was kind of a funny scheme. And then they also had a part that was it's kind of technical. Alternative learning experiences. You have these schools that have these programs to help kids that really can't get out. Maybe they're athletes or they're disabled and they do their school from home, but they support those. And there's a scheme to save about $4 million statewide on the backs of 8 schools across the state, several of which are in our own district, including OMAC, who's going to take a really big hit out of this. And it was kind of a rude way to do this, where this has been a program that's in place for a long time. They just said, if you have more than a third of your kids in this program, they're going to give you a one-third funding cut. And so I spoke about this on the floor. This is I made the case that if we need to make changes to these programs, let's have those conversations with the people who are impacted by them and not just top down slash and dice, because this is going to have a big impact on OMAC, particularly in Okanagan County Valley and the eastern part of the district, and potentially Republican Kettle Falls as well. But that bill did pass House and Senate, and we are urging the governor to veto that bill because it's really not very much savings, and it's very much an attack on rural schools, 8 of them.
Yeah, Senator Short, I thought, I don't think I've ever
seen Yeah, I got a little feisty on the Senate floor.
On the Senate floor.
Yeah. Well, it's so frustrating. I had an amendment that would have helped. It wouldn't have reduced the whole thing. But really what it comes down to, folks, these are students in the state of Washington. Now, they may not live in our district, but they are students who are here. And what we found is a lot of these kids have not had success in other districts where the online learning has really allowed them to flourish. And we're going to penalize these kids because, there are private companies who provide curriculum for these programs. And like that's supposed to be a bad thing. Actually, these programs are more rigorous because there's more oversight, as frankly they should be. You know, they're online classes. But to say, well, this is not, I mean, they're almost kind of saying it's not a legitimate form of education. And I got so frustrated. My Democratic colleague said, well, this is just minimal. You know, this is minimal. And this is quote unquote loss of the enrichment dollars. Well, I kind of, at that point, folks, my filter is like at zero. And so I didn't get gavelled down, but I did get a stern look from the lieutenant governor. But it was just like, when is enough enough? Like, if we're going to say every student matters in the state of Washington, then every student should matter. And to Andrew's point, it really is just a target on rural kids and really kids who are having significant challenges.
Well, there's been a number of proposals this session that were similar, that they're looking at cuts in a way that pretty much only affects things in Republican districts. And some people think that's intentional. Some people think it might just, maybe it's because they don't understand those things or they don't see the benefits. But regardless, a lot of those did fail. This one made it through.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is kind of a good segue into talking about parental rights as well. I mean, this is something that, you know, last year, the legislature passes this initiative to strengthen parental rights in schools. And then the very next year, they come back and really, I think a lot of people see it as an attack on parental rights. Just a year after the strengthening of parental rights. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's exactly accurate. So, you know, again, hopping the time machine, going back last year, what happened was an initiative was presented to the legislature that would have strengthened parents' rights in the public school system on a variety of fronts, including access to records and those sorts of things. And the legislature, I think, saw that there was a lot of passion around this issue. And so the legislature adopted the initiative as presented, which is an option. But then pretty quickly thereafter, at least I started hearing rumors that, you know, this was a time-saving mechanism in the sense that they're going to adopt the initiative and then come back in this session and then try and gut it. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. So they brought forward a bill that would essentially undo the initiative that was then adopted last year by the legislature and really, in many areas, roll back parents' rights significantly. And so there was a long, impassioned debate, frankly, in both chambers on this issue about what to do with it. I know all three of us spoke on it extensively. I talked about my concern about how, you know, I grew up in Inchelium, I went K through 12 there at Inchelium, and when I talk to my peers who still live around Inchelium, they've got kids, I say, how are things going with the school? And they say, they don't know, because they're homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
Or I talk to other, you know, parents, they're going to a, you know, small Christian academy, you know, nearby, something along those lines, and the enrollment at Inchelium has been declining. And that worries me. My grandparents taught there. You know, my dad went there. My older brother did. You know, my sister did. So I had a lot of skin in the game about the health and strength of Little Inchelium School and all of our public schools in the 7th District. And my concern is that more and more parents are going to say, you know what, in a homeschool, I'm going to send them on to private school because it's a better education for their kids. And if that's the case, you know, that's a decision the parents need to make. I support them in whatever decision they make with regard to that. But it's unfortunate because I think we're driving parents and students out of the public school system, and I think this is going to exacerbate it.
We have a question here from James, and it's interesting because it seems like the questions that we get oftentimes are around hunting and fishing. And James asks, why can't they give veterans a free fishing license and free hunting license for life?
Why can't they give veterans a free hunting license and a fishing license for life? Well, I'll tell you, this session, the answer would be, we love the veterans, we just don't have the money. There was a lot of that kind of, you know, type of dynamic whenever a proposal would come forward that might have that sort of flavor. But in this session where there's just a self-inflicted wound of overspending for years, you know, what we heard a lot was just the money's not there. But I think it's a great idea and something we should certainly look at.
Speaking of hunting and fishing, you know, not only are they not giving veterans a break, they're raising rates for hunting and fishing licenses kind of across the board, right?
They are. I swear, whatever walked gets taxed. You just look at the gamut, and hunting and fishing was a big one. I think it was 38% increase in that. Discover Pass was 50%. And the hard part about all of these, it hurts those that use hunting and fishing for subsistence. Mm-hmm. That increases their cost. But it's also the memories that families make. You look at the Discover Pass. It's going to campgrounds where you don't need a lot of money in order to enjoy time outdoors and be together camping and doing all of those activities. And it was astounding to me, the number of fees and taxes surcharges, they called them, too, on just about every segment of, you know, a Washingtonian's life in the state of Washington.
Yeah, the bills that raised hunting, fishing, and the Discover Pass, I guess, bothered me about just about the most of all the bad things that happened this year, just because it is one of those things. I grew up in a low-income family, and, you know, we didn't have money to go on vacations, but we like to do stuff outside. And I just know that if there had been a Discover Pass when I was a kid, we would not have gone to any of these state lands. And raising it 50% cost to go those places starting in a couple months here, that's just going to set more people back. So that was really disappointing. And the other thing that was especially frustrating, so we had a 38% increase in fishing license fees, but then there was a bill to add an additional $7.50 if you want to fish for salmon or sturgeon in the Columbia River or its tributaries. So this is everything in eastern Washington and then the southern portion of the state, you know, close to Oregon. Well, this is pretty offensive to me because it was brought to us by three legislators. Sponsor was in Federal Way, and the co-sponsors were from Seattle and Vashon Island. And so these three legislators live in the Puget Sound. You can fish for sturgeon and salmon in those areas without having to pay this extra $7.50. But if you want to go to anywhere else other than the Puget Sound region, you're going to have to pay an extra $7.50. That's really offensive to me. And even to make it worse, there's one Democrat district along the Columbia River. Both those Democrats voted no. It's if you're going to, and I talked about this on the floor too, it's if you're going to pass a bill, you need to talk to the people who are impacted by it. It's really inappropriate for me, if I was to write a bill about how Seattle runs their life, that should be offensive to them too. You know, this issue of the increased fees for Discover Passes and hunting and fishing licenses really struck a chord, I think, for the rural lawmakers of both parties. And, you know, one of the things that I had a chance to talk about a little bit on the floor was that, you know, increasing or decreasing fees and increasing and decreasing taxes either incentivize or disincentivizes certain behavior, right? That's sort of the idea.
Right. That's why you like cigarette taxes.
Right. Exactly. So with increasing the fees for hunting and fishing and increasing the fee for the Discover Pass, you're disincentivizing people to engage in those activities. And my point was that, especially for young people, when the option is go out hunting and fishing with dad or grandpa or stay at home and be on a laptop or on your phone, I think legislature made a really bad decision and created a disincentive to go out and enjoy our great outdoors. There's a reason people live here and like to hunt and fish in Washington State.
Well, and the secondary impact of that is folks that love to come from other areas of the country and the state to recreate and to hunt and fish.
Yep.
In the state of Washington, our communities, you look at some of the, you know, fishing derbies and things like that on Lake Roosevelt and other areas, you know, that we're going to see an impact, you know, from that as well. So not only does it hurt the individual, I think it's also going to hurt our communities. The recreation, you know, visitors play such a huge part, in part because we have such a high percentage of federal and state land in our districts, in our counties, that are lands that counties don't derive any income from, like they do, you know, for property taxes and such, and to, you know, pay and provide the services are, you know, folks that live in our communities do. And so it's really, I think for those of us, it's a double whammy.
Well, and then for hunters, it's, you know, they've also now have to spend more money, have to get a permit to buy a rifle to go hunting because there are new gun laws as well. You know, really, this one, I think that the permit to purchase is interesting because sometimes I think people forget that, you know, the Second Amendment is a right, right? So it's basically you got to get a permit to exercise a right.
Yeah, I know you're exactly right. So this session saw kind of what I call a three-front attack on our Second Amendment rights here in the state of Washington. One was identified as a priority bill for the Democrats, and that was to create a new permit required to purchase or transfer firearms. So you have to have another piece of paper in order to, you know, purchase these firearms. And that's different than the background checks, which already exist, right? Mm-hmm. So just another bureaucratic hurdle in order to engage in this constitutionally guaranteed right. There was another bill that would have banned guns in various public areas where it was deemed likely for children to be present, and that was interpreted so broadly as to include basically, in my mind, you know, just a wide variety of areas where people wouldn't ordinarily think that, and there were massive
questions and issues about how the public will be put on warning, that, you know, a place where last month you could take a gun, this month you can't take a gun, you know, that sort of thing. And then also there was a proposed significant increase in the sales tax on ammunition. Now, the last two, the increase in sales tax and the guns in public areas, did not pass. But the Democrats did get through their permit to purchase. And, you know, I made the point on the floor, we've made an amendment that would have said that military veterans are not required to have this permit to purchase. The other side did not take it, but I said, you know, this permit to purchase, they've already got it. Yeah. You know, it exists under the U.S. Constitution. They've got, as it exists for, you know, all residents of the state of Washington. But a big argument against, or a big argument in favor of the permit to purchase as offered by their side is, well, we need it, you know, for safety reasons. Like, you know, our veterans are trained in the proper use of firearms, and so this should not apply to them. And a lot of people kind of nod on the floor, and then the Democrats still voted it down. So, you know, disappointing result there on that piece of legislation. And the Democrats have made clear they're going to continue to attack our Second Amendment rights.
It's going to be tough for your district, too, because it requires a class, basically, to, you know, to get this permit. We're in the 7th District. I mean, are they going to be able to, do they have places that can handle these classes? I mean, shooting ranges, that sort of thing? Because there's live fire training as part of this.
The one that's closest is in Spokane, in that sharpshooting.
That's a long way for a lot of people.
I know, right? And they're not going to be able to. I mean, can you imagine? And I think, frankly, that's why they put it in there, is they want to minimize and make it hard for people to exercise their constitutionally guaranteed right under the Second Amendment. And the process they set up is not doable. There's not enough infrastructure in place to even go and do the things that the bill requires.
I wanted to get to, we only have about 5 minutes left, less than 5 minutes at this point. I want to get to rent control, because this is a very controversial bill that passed out of the legislature. Representative Engel, you know, you're a landlord, and you talked a lot about the impacts of this. As it left the legislature and headed to the governor's desk, what are your thoughts?
I think it's terrible, actually. I believe that it's going to ultimately harm tenants and landlords alike. And it's really unfortunate. And certainly the intention from the Democrats was to help tenants have more predictability in their rents. The problem is that when you go and you cap rent and put other regulations on landlords, it's going to result in landlords deciding not to be landlords anymore. And we've seen this in the past over the last several years, as every time there's another set of regulations on landlords, a lot of your, particularly small landlords, decide they don't want to deal with it anymore. And your mom and pop landlords that have just a handful or even maybe one rental, oftentimes they don't know how to navigate these complex situations. And when there's concerns about, you know, heavy penalties and fines associated with failing to follow one of these rules, it's just not worth it anymore. And they sell it. And oftentimes what happens is people from the Puget Sound, Seattle area, or California will buy these houses, and maybe they move into them, fix them up, whatever. The tenants are displaced. It results in people losing their places. Or if new landlords buy them, they jack the rents up when they buy them. And so that's a problem. And then we also see investment reduce. People don't build new homes to rent out when this happens. We've already had some developers say that if this bill is signed into law, they're going to stop construction in across Washington State. Most of those developers are not operating in the 7th District, which is also part of the reason we have such a severe housing shortage. They're not going to come here now.
The Senate, Senator Short, actually made the bill better, but then it went to what we call conference. So basically where the House and the Senate have to come together, and that conference, it didn't seem like the Senate position was really represented in the conference. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but you tell me.
Well, that bill on the floor, holy cow, was something else. We had a number of Democrats, depending on the vote and the amendment, when we had the rent control bill before us, sided with us. And the two areas that sided is that single family residences should be exempt. So if you weren't part of a corporation essentially that owned that home, then you would not be under the rent cap. on that. The second piece was actually we discussed the cap, and we increased that cap to 10% plus CPI, you know, basically inflation. And actually that survived in the final bill in the Senate. Man, there were fireworks on the Senate floor from those that wanted the bill, and they wanted it the way it was. And in fact, frankly, the next day they had a closed caucus for like 2.5 hours. And I'm like, whoa. I mean, look, folks, this is the ebb and flow of the legislative process. You don't just get it your way. There are times bills aren't amended, and then but significantly most of the time they are. And what it really showed me is there were several in their Democratic caucus that really weren't, you know, they weren't listened to.
Well, we had 11. It takes 11 Democrats to stop a bill in the House. We had 9 Democrats opposed to the bill.
Yeah. Well, that's going to do it for us for not only this week, but for the 2025 legislative session. We will be back, though, I promise you, next year. Next legislative session for another round of Live from Olympia with 7th Legislative District State Senator Shelley Short and Representative Andrew Engel and Hunter A. Bell on Okanagan Country Radio. I'm Tracy Ellis. Thank you so much for being with us this legislative session. Have a great day.